Hi, everyone.
Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Zev Shulkin, an ophthalmologist. Thank you for your time, and let's jump right into the questions.
Okay, thank you for asking me. I'm honored and privileged to be here.
So I believe that most understand that an ophthalmologist handles like the medical aspects of eye care. So could you briefly explain what is within the scope of an ophthalmologist and what is not?
Sure. So an ophthalmologist is a medical doctor. So I went to college and then medical school. And then there were 4 years of postgraduate medical training, 1 year in internal medicine to learn how to take care of patients and learn general medicine. And then after that was 3 year residency in eye surgery, basic techniques of eye surgery, things like cataract surgery, LASIK surgery, and then a sort of a general overview of eye surgical and medical care, a lot of trauma in there. And then after that, I did 3 fellowships, one in pediatric ophthalmology and strabismus. And then I did an eye plastic surgery and a neuro ophthalmology fellowship. So my practice is sort of made up of that subspecialty area within ophthalmology. And so the scope of what I do is a lot of child eye problems and then a lot of eyelid problems and then the relationship between the eye and the brain. I spend a lot of time helping patients who have issues in those areas.
And what made you to consider a career in medicine over the variety of different options available?
Yeah, so my father was a doctor and I always admired his passion and his ability to help people and pull people through serious illness. You know, I had a great background in science at St. Mark's. I feel like I got a great education with George Haig in the chemistry lab and Mrs. Barta, and there were several other sort of mentors that got me interested in science and got me excited about science. I think it all sort of started there.
And how did you prepare yourself, like outside of the educational qualifications, to lead a career in medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be a human and you have to be someone who cares about people and their outcomes, and you have to be empathetic to what they have. And I feel like I had a humanities background as well, and you have to be able to learn how to write and communicate and speak to people. I think that's more of the art of medicine. We can all learn the science and we can all learn the surgery, and you can teach anyone to do surgery, but the art of it is communicating and helping people through difficult situations and really being a good listener. I think that's probably most of how I've changed in the last 10 years. I think people just want to be heard and try to listen as best I can.
And on the topic of like how medicine is more like the human part is also pretty important. When studying or when picking a major in college, only about like, according to a U.S. news article, only about 50% actually do like science related majors. So what is your view on the major that you do in like your undergraduate and the role that plays later on?
It's tangential to what your career probably is going to be these days, unless you're going to be a, you know, computer programmer or someone who's a management information systems person. The skills you're going to learn in college are going to be how to write and how to read and how to think, how to have an open mind about society and situations. And I think that's the important skills anyone should take out of college. Read books they may or may not agree with, and read articles they may or not agree with, and be literate and be able to read and write and communicate with people. So I think those are the lessons people need to learn how to take home. So the major is secondary or tangential to the actual skills one should probably try to acquire. St. Mark's already gets you ahead of the curve when you get to college because you know how to read, you know how to study, you know how to put in the hours and think. And so that was a real advantage.
In terms of like how you picked your specialization within medicine, because there are many different options available. So what made you narrow those down to ophthalmology? And then within ophthalmology, what made you specialize in like strabismus and the other things that you specialize in?
I think today's medicine, everyone has their own niche, their own area. You don't know much about the other area. I feel like I was pretty fortunate at Parkland and Southwestern to get exposure to all fields of medicine and trauma. Learned, you know, the renal system and the pulmonary system and the neurosurgical system. We learned how to take disease and use labs and history and deductive reasoning to come up with we call our differential diagnosis, and to think critically about our patients' problems. The great thing about the eye is it's sort of the window, no pun intended, into the body. And there's so many diseases I see every day that the person may show up with one subtle eye finding and then I say, well, actually you have this problem or that problem. And then I'm able to lean on colleagues to help treat those problems. So it sort of brings a lot of medicine, a lot of dermatology, a lot of surgery into one pod and blends it together. And I always thought that was interesting. I also thought the ophthalmologists were sort of the happiest doctors I knew. I still see that. I think they're the least jaded and the happiest doctors that I was exposed to. And the first exposure I had was by to ophthalmology really was by Chip Fagadow, who's a St. Mark's graduate. I think he's class of 73. I have to ask him, but he was really the first person that took me under his wing and mentored me to get to this point.
For the average high school student, could you explain like what exactly a residency or fellowship entails and the different like options that are available to an ophthalmologist and how long like each fellowship option might take?
Yeah, so there's five or six fellowships within ophthalmology. So everyone has to do the residency and learn the general structures of the eye, the surgical management of these diseases, and again, medical management. And then there's the cornea, there's eyelid surgery, there's retina, there's glaucoma, which lowers the pressure of the eye, there's pediatrics, and there's another fellowship called uveitis, which is inflammation of the eye, and then neuro-ophthalmology, which deals with the optic nerve. So there's sort of fellowships in each part of the eye, and that those are between 1 and 2 years. And those are sort of suggested these days. But coming out of the residency program, you'll be able to be a good general ophthalmologist. And those doctors are able to do cataract surgery and lots of what we call refractions and contact lens fitting. And those skills will be acquired through the resident. And the residency is a lot of work. You're learning a new language. It's, you know, some of the specialties in medicine are continuations of medical school. Ophthalmology is very different. It has its own language. It takes about 6 to 12 months to just learn the language and learn the numbers and learn how we think. And that's not, no one's exposed to that in medical school. So there is about a 6-month learning curve just how to use our different lenses and use our exam findings, which is very different from the rest of medical school.
More and more recently, medical school has been like pretty competitive to get into. So what are some suggestions you have, like maybe some summer jobs or internships that you were involved with or
might help? I think a lot of what happened in COVID with both residencies and medical student admissions were we basically dumbed everyone down to just a number, and we lost that interview process, that personal touch process that we used to use pretty heavily. If there was someone that had great scores that we thought was going to be difficult, we might have some influence over whether we're going to take that person or not. And so I think we've lost that in the last couple of years just because everything's a number. And so I think there is a certain, at this point, you pretty much have to have the right MCAT score and the right grade point average to be admitted to medical school. I think that's the first thing is you've got to have the numbers. They're not going to take you without the numbers. I think research helps. I think exposure helps, but I think, and I hope it swings back the other way, but I think right now they're looking for sort of numbers and what your MCAT is. So I pray for the interview to really weigh heavier down the road.
Could you talk a little bit about how continuing education requirements work for doctors in general, and then maybe just specifically for ophthalmology?
Yeah, we have a 10-year board certification cycle. So we have 10 years of continuing education that we have to fulfill, which is between 30 and 40 hours of extra training a year, and then some board stuff that I'm now in the process of renewing. And so that's ongoing. You're always learning about your patients, but there is some formal learning you have to do as you continue. So it is a big time commitment throughout the years of one, but that's how you get better. And that's how you learn meetings and sharing with colleagues and sharing cases. And so that's how we learn.
Before we jump into some questions about daily routines and some other questions like that, could you briefly explain like how an ophthalmologist differs from an optometrist, which obviously the main difference is like medical doctor versus like not medical doctor, but like other than that, just like briefly overview just some of the differences.
Yeah. So an optometrist does not attend medical school. They attend a graduate degree program, and we work nicely together. It's a loaded question because there are turf battles, as you can imagine, all the time. Both formal and informal. So there's turf battles where you'll see a patient that the optometrist may have managed differently or frankly incorrectly. And then you'll see patients where ophthalmologists did the same thing. I have been fortunate to have been involved in some of the legislative battles where the optometrists are trying to acquire maybe more surgical privileges, actually with less training. So that's argued about every 2 or 3 years in the state legislature. And every couple of years, they'll advance a bill in the state house or in the state senate. And that it takes a lot of work, and they're very well organized, and we're not as organized. And so that comes up every couple of years. I've been able to be pretty involved in that. But I will say that even on the other hand, I do work a lot with some great ones that lean on me a lot, and I lean on them. And there's certain things that they do really, really well. And so I try to sort of work nicely and peacefully with them whenever I can.
Could you briefly talk about how a typical work day or work week looks like for you? Maybe daily responsibilities, number of hours. Yeah.
So I'm in a unique situation. So it's very heavy on administrative. So I have staff, and I have medical assistants, and I have people that work in my office that answer the phones. And so there's some there's a lot of administrative duties and things I have to do. And then there's being a doctor, and then there's operating. So my practice is I'm either in my office or I'm in the operating room. And so tomorrow I'll be in the operating room the first half of the day, and then in the office the second half of the day. And most days are sort of like that. And then some days I'll have to go run at 4 o'clock and do a case. And then there's a lot of paperwork in the evening. So I'm always working. Fortunately, there's weekend hours that come up that, you know, you think he's just an eye doctor, but there's always emergencies and patient calls. And so it's sort of a 24/7 job. Now, there's a lot of ways to have a job. You could work for someone, you could work at the medical school. Those hours tend to be a little better. I'm in a private practice, which is just me. And so there's more work goes in my lap.
You mentioned like working at a medical school or private practice. So do you always have to have a private practice as an ophthalmologist, or can you work for like hospitals or other types of institutions?
Yeah, I would say I'm kind of a dinosaur. I think most people are headed towards working for a hospital. There's very few people that continue to have autonomy. And then if you have autonomy, a lot of times private equity is gobbling you up. And that's pretty popular right now. So there's not that many people that are sort of on their own per se left. There are a few, maybe more in ophthalmology than in other specialties, you know, but I think that the way this is going is there's just too much burden to administer one's office. And so one would build a practice, potentially sell it, and then give over control for a price. And that's where sort of this is headed. And then there's academic medicine, meaning you work at UT Southwestern in Dallas, you know, or at Baylor in Houston, and that you are an employee of that school, and you have residents and under you, and you're in a teaching role. And those are very popular jobs as well these days. Tends to have a little less administrative focus and more focus on research and education. And I still do teach at the med school once a month. So I do have a faculty appointment there. So I'm able to teach. It's actually a lot of fun. I learned a ton from the residents, and I still have my foot in that a little bit.
Do you see yourself ever in the future like fully transitioning over to?
I could see it. Yeah, I could see an academic future. Yeah, I could see it. I think the way things are headed, I think we're probably all sort of headed down that path. But I could see myself being an academician. It would probably be quite exhilarating. Maybe later in my career to do that. Probably be less work, more fun. So,
what do you like most about your work, and what are some of the challenges, or what do you like least about your
work? Yeah, I would say that I love the operating room. I think it's a challenge every time I go in. You never know what you're going to find. Surgery is completely unpredictable. Something could be the simplest thing possible, and it could be difficult. And something could seem very difficult and be really easy. And I am humbled by that every day. I'm very involved with reconstructive work around the eye. People have had cancers, tumors, things like that. I find that work to be rewarding. I spend hours in my head drawing and plotting on how I'm going to put someone back together. And that's a real exhilarating surgery to be able to do that. And so I enjoy that as well. And I fix a lot of people who have double vision. That's really, really helpful. And then we do a lot of eyelid surgery, and patients tend to be happy for the most part. So it's a very good mix of wonderful people. And then a lot of pediatric surgery as well.
Based on the knowledge and experience that you have today, if you could go back in time to high school or college, would you do anything differently? Maybe focusing on something or another, or developing some skills that maybe at that time you didn't think were that important, or maybe reaching out to mentors or interacting more with professors?
I wish I would have learned more about business and investing and stock market and administration and how to run a business. I wish I could have worked at 7-Eleven and helped the manager for a summer or something like that, just to learn how cash flow works and inventory and employees, because I think probably could have learned a lot more there than I learned in medical school about the business side of things, because they don't teach us how to have employees. They don't teach us how to talk to people, how to treat people, how to pay people, how to do payroll. And so, you know, you learn people you don't think you may have needed to learn from. And I probably wish I would have done that in retrospect. If I knew this was going to be my career, having business savvy, I think, would have been a little more helpful, because I've had to learn it, although not well, I've had to learn that side of things, because at the end of the day, you basically have a small business. You know, and even though we're passionate and fair and charitable to our patients, at the end of the day, you have people to pay. And you know, even like during COVID, we had like essentially weren't working, but we still had employees. So then what do you do? And so there's just a constant business pressure that I was not anticipating and no one really prepared me for. It still comes up. It's daunting. And then within that, decisions on employees and medical records and electronic systems and things like that take a lot of time. And decisions like that are made not always well. So
earlier you were talking about like one of the things that you need to have or to go into medicine is sort of like that humanity and being able to like relate with other people. So what are some other maybe personality traits that are like necessary to being a doctor that you use?
Maybe? I think you have to be detail oriented. Every little detail matters. You have to be meticulous. You cannot cut corners. You have to be honest and open with patients and direct in a nice way, but also make them feel like you're doing something for them. There's a lot to it. It takes a lot of patience, and it's something that part of it I've really had to refine and get better. All of us slip up sometimes, you know, but that part of it has really been a wonderful character transformation for me, from walking out thinking that I had seen and done everything at Parkland in the 6 years I was there to, you know, being humbled pretty early on, you know, by you really hadn't seen anything and you'd never been on your own. You never operated on your own and you never talked to a patient on your own. So that was pretty wonderful, that transformation. And it's a challenge.
Since you have your own private practice instead of like being affiliated with a hospital, could you talk a little bit about the process for like getting patients to come to your practice?
Yeah. So my patients are almost 99% of the time referred from another physician. Sometimes patients are referred by friends, but my patients are referred to me for my area of the eye, basically by other endocrinologists, doctors, ophthalmologists that need help on cases. And I provide that help. So that's 99% of how people end up in my chair. It's just a higher level of care. Meaning the other doctor is quite excellent, almost all the time. It's just I'm providing a different service within ophthalmology, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The last couple of questions I have are just like, what is your best advice for someone in their junior or senior year in high school or maybe starting college that's considering going into medicine? Yeah,
I would read as much as you can. I would read classical literature and do things that read history and learn how to write and do things that have nothing to do with medicine, because those are the skills you're never gonna be able to go back and acquire. I always feel like I was a pretty good writer in college, and it helps me communicate. So I would focus away from medicine. It's always good to shadow people and see what they're doing and see if they're happy or not or whatever. But I would get that focus on the humanities and skills and being literate in art and culture and drama and theater and business. I think that the well-rounded boy or the well-rounded man is going to go far in life in whatever he does. So I would keep acquiring the skills that St. Mark's provides. That's the piece of information that I would be multidimensional and instead of unidimensional. Thank you.
Thank you for your time and advice again.
All right. Be in touch. This is fun. Thanks, man.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. Thank you and have a great rest of your day.